Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
There has been an ongoing debate about reparations to right some of the wrongs of slavery. Last month, a House subcommittee heard from writer Ta-Nehisi Coates, who made his case by referring to something called Black Wall Street.
This body has a chance to both make good on its 2009 apology for enslavement and reject fair weather patriotism. To say that a nation is both its credits and its debits. That if Thomas Jefferson matters, so does Sally Hemings. That if D-Day matters, so does Black Wall Street.
Black Wall Street refers to the Greenwood section of Tulsa, Oklahoma, a wealthy African-American community until it was burned to the ground in 1921 by a white mob, more than 300 African-Americans killed. It used to be inaccurately called the Tulsa Race Riot, but now it's referred to as what it was, the Tulsa Race Massacre, and next year marks 100 years on. It's an incredible story, still reverberating as Tulsa debates what to do next year. We wanted to learn more from Brenda Alford. Her grandparents and great-uncle owned the Nails Brothers Shoe Shop in Greenwood. Brenda, thanks for speaking with us.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Is this something that you heard about growing up?
No, it is not. I didn't hear about the race massacre while I was growing up, ironically. I knew about the businesses that our family had. My grandfather was a very proud college-educated shoemaker. And he and his brother Henry Nails owned the Nails Brothers Shoe Shop. That was the main businesses. They also had at that same location a record shop. They were also owners of the Nails Park and Dance Pavilion. And also they had the first community skating rink.
Well, this was before. There's a before and after that night. On May 31st, 1921, a 19-year-old African-American, Dick Rowland, went to a building downtown, stepped into an elevator, and the elevator operator screamed. Now, historians have written that he might have stepped on her foot, and so she screamed. But he was arrested. He was taken to the courthouse. Newspaper headlines read, "Nab Negro for attacking girl in elevator to lynch Negro tonight." And some black men came to the courthouse.
Right. Basically, there was a group of men who were going to go and try to help out. And they were met with opposition. At one point, according to history, a white man asked one of the black men who had a gun what he intended to do with the gun. And the black man said, "Use it if I have to." They were there basically to try to protect Dick Rowland because it was rumored within the community that this group of white men was going to go and try to hang him. Mm. I had not heard about the race massacre aspect of our family history. I did not find out about it until about 2003 when I received a notification from a legal entity here in Tulsa that myself and many others were being included in a lawsuit against the city of Tulsa and other entities, basically regarding reparations for survivors and descendants of survivors of the 1921 race massacre. That's how I found out, and I have to say that I was pretty devastated.
Right. To live your whole life and not know that this had happened.
Well, exactly.
Well, let's get back to the story. As you said, the white man says to the black, and by the way, these black men who came to help Dick Rowland, they'd served in the war, you know,
yes.
And they'd come home to this segregated city and these false accusations. At any rate, there was a shot fired. Nobody was harmed in that moment. And
right.
Then that white mob went to what was then known as Black Wall Street. Tell us what you found out, what happened that night.
Basically, gunshots were heard to be fired, and the neighbors, the people in the community were trying to warn everybody that there was a mob coming through the city, and they were shooting and going into people's homes and having them to leave their homes, and they were going in and burning their homes. My grandparents, along with their then 2-year-old daughter, their family and friends, ran for their lives from our neighborhood went to one of the parks that was farther out and stayed there until they felt like it was okay to come back, only to find their homes and their businesses looted and burned to the ground.
Well, not just burned, but firebombed. There's been speculation
yes.
that Tulsa was the first city in the U.S. to be bombed from the air because some of the white men went and flew their airplanes above Greenwood and dropped kerosene bombs on it.
Exactly. My grandparents and their community were running for their lives, they were being shot at, and the bombs were being dropped on them as well. So it was a horrendous situation.
Did they lose everything?
They did. They lost everything.
At least they didn't lose their lives.
Yes, and I am grateful for that, because my reality every day of my life is that if they had not survived that day, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
But as we said, hundreds didn't survive. And there's speculation that there is a mass grave. A young white boy said he saw white men digging a trench in Oaklawn Cemetery. And there is speculation there's a mass grave there. And that's one of the questions being raised now, is whether to exhume it. What do you want?
I think it should be exhumed. It was well known amongst family members of mine that mass graves were there. As I contemplated why I didn't know about the race massacre, certain stories that I heard as a very small child came back to my memory. One of those was that when our relatives, my great uncles, would come to town to visit, and we'd be driving to go to maybe some location within Tulsa, and we would pass by the Oaklawn Cemetery, the conversation would be, quote unquote, "You know they're still over there," as we passed that cemetery, and everybody in the car would agree, yes, they knew that they were still over there. And I was, like I said, a small child. I didn't understand what they were talking about, but of course now I do.
Right.
I would also find out later that I have a great-grandmother who was also a survivor of the race massacre, who is buried there, was buried there in 1925. However, a lot of the records for folks who were buried before and after the race massacre cannot be found.
Well, part of the debate as to whether or not to exhume, part of the debate is that it is also a cemetery, and it would potentially disturb the graves of people like your grandmother who are buried there. But there was a commission created in 1997 that recommended a physical investigation to clarify whether there's a mass grave. That never happened, and now there's a push to have that happen again. As we said, next year marks the 100-year centennial of this massacre. But there's still so much debate about how to talk about this. Do you worry that in talking about exhuming a mass grave and exhuming, you know, you're also digging up a painful past that some say maybe should stay in the past?
I believe that this whole situation, the discussion about the race massacre, you know, all of that was swept under the rug for many years. Some people, you know, were threatened with their very lives of their families if they said anything. I'm glad that in this day and time, it is being recognized. So, yes, I do feel like we should move forward with it, because I believe it would give some closure to those who lost family members and friends and in that situation. I know that my grandparents, they lost family, friends, neighbors that they never saw again.
Do you blame in any part your family or others in the African American community for not talking about this?
No, I don't. Because I came to understand, I grew up in the Greenwood community myself as a little girl. And I have to say it was one of the happiest times of my life. And I believe that my grandparents, my father, all of our parents, they wanted us to grow up in a positive community so that we would maybe be able to right the wrongs that had been done. The call of the community was to get your education, and so that you can provide the type of living that you would want to have for your family.
Well, that's, you know, part of Ta-Nehisi Coates' call for reparations. This is a disruption, a horror. People were murdered. But it's also an economic disruption that would set a family back for generations when you lose businesses.
Exactly. You know, our community was not able to pass on generational wealth. I watched in my time my uncle, my grandfather's son, who followed in his footsteps and got his degree in shoemaking. I watched as he tried to restart the business in the 70s and was unable to do it. And we saw the effects it had on him. It was absolutely horrible.
Do you find yourself trying to picture it? I mean, it is amazing to think of a 1921, in the heart of, you know, a segregated time in the U.S., a community, a black community, schools, hospitals, libraries, churches, so many businesses, as we say. It was Booker T. Washington that called it the Black Wall Street.
Yes.
Do you find yourself daydreaming about that? What that must have been?
Well, I remember after I found out about this aspect of our family history, one of the things I remember doing is going back and just taking a walk on Greenwood, on the street where I grew up, and just taking a walk as I did as a child, walking to school every day, and just wondering why I didn't know it, and also just thinking, how could something as horrible, you know, as that was, happen in a community that I grew up in and found so loving and just so peaceful? It was hard to imagine that something so horrendous had occurred in that area so many years before.
But it did. That's Brenda Alford. Her grandparents and great uncle owned the Nails Brothers shoe shop in Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was destroyed, firebombed, along with just about the entire community in the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, the centennial next year. Brenda, thanks so much for talking to us about it.
Thanks for having me.